Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you from Boise, Idaho. We're going to get into today's episode in just a moment. I do encourage everybody, please leave your comments at podcastalley.com. We got some nice new comments, so I'll go ahead and get into them. Love the show, Adam. I vote for you each month now. I'm now through each of your podcasts, and I'm finishing the last few episodes available on Hulu. I'm not sure what it is, but Web has a gift of making events that would be otherwise mundane fascinating. Keep up the great work, KG in New Mexico. Yeah, he's right about that. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why you don't see networks doing some of these bunko cases, check writing stuff, because they don't have the talent to make it get interesting, and Webb did. He made most of the episodes. There was one in season three that I thought was just not really good, but most of them he's been able to make fairly interesting. Another one, my name is Marco, and I'm from the Netherlands. I really enjoy the great series of Dragnet. By coincidence, I found about this show, and I must say I'm completely hooked. Furthermore, I really like the comments by Adam. Keep on going, I would say, and greetings from Harlem, Europe. Kind regards, Marco. Well, thanks a lot, Marco. And good to know we got listeners over in the Netherlands. It's a worldwide phenomenon. Great show. I look forward to every Saturday to hear a new episode. Well, thanks, Michael. We've had some nice comments from him before. And another comment here. Thanks for another good month of podcast, Adam. It's been interesting to listen to you as you grow into this role. If it helps, I'm in favor of some Jeff Regan so that you have more material to make it last. I'm sorry, but that ship actually already sailed. But we'll be working in some supplemental Jeff Regan. I'm hoping I can find some time to go ahead and record that later on this month. But no promises at this point. All right, well, before we get into today's show, I want to let you know just a little bit about our sponsors. You've probably heard about the technology remote access, but you thought you had to be a tech expert to figure it out. I want to tell you, with GoToMyPC, remote access has never been so easy. From your living room, a hotel room in New York, or an internet cafe in Paris, or Paris, if you want to pronounce it that way. Simply log on to gotomypc.com and your office desktop instantly appears. GoToMyPC is built for a non-technical person, so anyone can use it. Free customer service is available 24/7. I've used GoToMyPC and I love that interface and being able to access my home computer even if I'm 500 miles away down in Reno. You can try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. But you must visit gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free 30-day trial. All right, well, we're going to get into today's episode, which is actually one of the more interesting topics. We'll talk about it a little bit afterwards, but this is The Big Least.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight in Miami, Florida, a group of men are gathered together for their annual conference. For their day-in, day-out service to the public, Dragnet honors the 58th Annual Conference of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. The story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A wealthy retired businessman suddenly disappears. You've got two possibilities to work on: suspicion of suicide, suspicion of foul play. There's no lead to the man's whereabouts. Your job? Find him.
Documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, February 6th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the record bureau, and it was 11:18 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
Joe?
Hi. She show up yet?
Yeah, a couple of minutes ago. She's waiting for us now in the next room.
Did you talk to her at all?
No. Seems to be a nice enough woman. I don't know how much help she's going to be.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
Miss Brown, I'd like to have you meet my partner, Sergeant Friday. Joe, this is Miss Brown.
Hello. I'm sorry I wasn't home when you stopped by yesterday, Sergeant. I got the card you left, though. I called in as soon as I got home.
Well, thanks for coming in, Miss Banner. We have a few questions we'd like to ask you. It won't take very long.
We have a communication from a Gladys Dillon back in New York, Miss Banner. It's about her brother, Chester Dillon. We understand you rented his home from him out on Rolston Avenue.
Mr. Dillon? Well, yes. I've got a 2-year lease on the house. I rented it from him last November.
Well, according to the letter we got from Mr. Dillon's sister, she's worried about him. She hasn't heard from him in some time. Have you any idea where we could contact him?
Well, last I heard, he left on a trip to New York. That was about 8 weeks ago, I'd say.
Uh-huh.
You see, I usually sent the check for the rent, the apartment he had here, and when he left on his trip, he told me to hold on to the rent checks, and he'd collect them when he got back.
How long did he say he'd be gone?
I don't remember definitely. I think he said 4 or 5 months.
He didn't leave any forwarding address, any place you could contact him back east?
No, he didn't. He just wanted to get away. Didn't want to be bothered with anyone. He wasn't feeling very well. He was very depressed, poor man.
Well, why was that, ma'am? Do you know?
His wife died just a few months ago, you know.
No, ma'am, we didn't know. All we got from his sister was that she hadn't heard from Dillon. She was worrying. She didn't give us any other information.
Oh, yes. Mrs. Dillon died in last September, I think it was. Poor man felt terrible about it. Couldn't seem to get over it. That's why he rented the house to me. It reminded him too much of her.
Yes, ma'am, I understand.
Lovely home they have. Mr. Dillon said he really didn't want to rent it, but he couldn't stand being alone in the house. It was a large place, you know.
Yes, ma'am. We checked with the people living in the house now. We understand you leased the place to them last month.
I subleased it, yes. You see, it just got too big for me. It was nice at first, but it got to be an awful lot of work. I rented it to this family and took a smaller house down the street.
Would you happen to know any of Mr. Dillon's friends in the city, Miss Banner? Anyone we could contact who might know where we can locate him?
I don't know. He didn't seem to have any friends. He and his wife had only been in the city a year before she died. He was retired, you know.
Yes, ma'am. We talked to some of the neighbors out there. They couldn't tell us much about him.
Maybe some of the people he did business with might know something. Have you tried the neighborhood bank out there? I know that's where Mr. Dillon had his account.
No, ma'am. We haven't yet.
Well, I can give you the bank's address. It's about all, though.
That's the only contact you know of?
I'm afraid so, yes. I didn't know much about Mr. Dillon's private affairs. Whenever I talked to him, it seemed the only thing he had on his mind was his wife's death. He couldn't seem to get over it. Seemed like he didn't want to get over it.
You mentioned that when you leased his home, Mr. Dillon took an apartment. Do you happen to have that address, Miss Banner?
Well, I don't have it with me now, but I have it at home. I can call in and give it to you if you like.
If you would, please.
Certainly.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Banner. You'll have our card, and when you hear anything at all from Mr. Dillon, we'd appreciate it if you'd call us.
Well, surely, I'll call you right away. You think something could have happened to him?
Well, it's possible. We don't know. All we have is a letter from his sister.
It does seem kind of strange, doesn't it? He wasn't feeling too well. I wondered why he hadn't contacted me about sending the rent money to him. He's such a nice man, Mr. Dillon. I certainly hope nothing's happened to him.
Well, you say he was very depressed about his wife's death, ma'am. Would you say that it was getting to be a little abnormal with him, maybe?
Well, I wouldn't know about that, Sergeant, but I didn't know he brooded about it all the time. He felt that he'd lost everything. Didn't seem to want to go on.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever give an indication that maybe he might take his own life? I mean, all this brooding over his wife?
Well, no, nothing definite. Just depressed and moody all the time. Oh, now that I remember it, the last time I saw him, he did say something kind of funny.
Yes, ma'am. What was that?
It was the day before he left. We were talking about the rent money, and I asked him if I couldn't send it to him. He had kind of a strange look on his face.
Yeah.
He said, where I'm going, I won't need the money.
The day before we called on Lucille Banner for an interview, a letter had been received from a Miss Gladys Dillon in Elmira, New York. The request was routine. It was one of thousands of similar letters received every year by police departments all over the country. Each one of them has to be worked out to the satisfaction of all parties concerned, the person who's reported missing and the person looking for them. It's an enormous job requiring thousands of man hours annually. Like the dozens of other investigations handled by the police officer, some of them end happily, some of them in tragedy. Whatever the result, the finding of a lost person is just as important a function of your local police department as any other investigation. Gladys Dillon hadn't heard from her brother recently. She was worried about him. She asked us to investigate. Our initial interview with Lucille Banner, the woman who'd rented Chester Dillon's home, failed to yield much of a lead as to his whereabouts. The only source of additional information she could offer was the neighborhood bank where Dillon had his account. 1 o'clock that afternoon, Ben and I drove out to interview the manager of the bank, a Mr. Harrison.
Yes, that's right. Mr. Dillon's had his account with us ever since he came to Los Angeles. I know him quite well. Is there something you'd like to know about him?
Yes, sir, there is. We had a request from his sister in New York. She'd like to locate him.
Well, I'm pretty sure his account's still open here. Matter of fact, I'm positive it is. This moment, I'll have one of the clerks get his file.
All right, thanks, Mr. Harrison.
That reminds me. I almost forgot. Yeah,
what's that?
I've got to get to the bank tomorrow for sure. Payment on my cars a day past due already. Only got 2 maidens left.
Well, yeah, you're doing fine. I got another 8 months to go.
Not so fine. 2 more payments to go, and now the wife wants a new one. Never fail. Yeah. Here we are, Sergeant. Just as I thought. Mr. Dillon's account is still open.
Uh-huh. Have there been any recent deposits or withdrawals on the account?
Mm-hmm. Let's have a look here. Uh-huh. Just as I thought, nothing since he left on his trip. That last withdrawal date was November 27th.
He mentioned to you that he was going on a trip, did he?
Yes, I think he said he was going back to New York, more or less a vacation trip. His wife died recently. He didn't take it too well.
Yes, I understand. Did he leave any instructions about his account with you, Mr. Harrison? Any address you could contact him at if you had to?
No, he didn't leave any instructions with me. No address. Just a vacation trip. He said he didn't expect to be gone too long.
Did he mention how long it would be?
5 or 6 weeks, I think. That's what he said. I happened to talk to him about it because at the time he made quite a sizable withdrawal. I thought maybe he was a little unhappy with our service.
Mm-hmm. How much was the withdrawal, sir?
Same. Here it is, November 27th. He withdrew $2,400.
Was that in cash or in traveler's checks, do you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it shows here that it was in cash.
Mr. Harrison, you said a minute ago that you knew Mr. Dillon pretty well.
Yes, that's right. He used to stop and chat with me whenever he'd come in the bank. That was usually once a week. I didn't know him socially, though.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned he seemed to take his wife to death pretty hard. What would you say his mental condition was last time you saw him?
All right, I'd say. Just after his wife's death, he wasn't in very good shape. Brooded about it quite a bit. And he began to pull out of it. Seemed to be in a fairly good frame of mind. Planned his vacation. Was looking forward to it.
I see.
Why do you ask? Is something wrong?
No, sir, not that we know of. Routine check, that's about the size of it. Does Dillon have any other real estate besides the house on Ralston Avenue? Would you happen to know that?
Not to my knowledge, no. He has no other business connections in Los Angeles. Here are all his references right here.
Mm-hmm.
See, most of them are charge accounts and so forth. I remember the time he opened his account with us, he told me he was retired. He and his wife came out here for their help.
Do they have any relatives out here, do you know, Mr. Harrison?
No. From what I understand, both of their families are in the East. They don't have any children, according to his application. Very few relatives.
Mm-hmm. And since Dillon was in here last November to make that withdrawal, you've had no communications from him at all, have you?
No, sir, I haven't. What seems to be the trouble? Do you have an idea something might be wrong?
Nothing definite, no, sir. We've been told about his feeling depressed over his wife's death, and there was some indication he might possibly have done away with himself. After what you've told us, it doesn't seem too likely.
I don't know. I wouldn't like to commit myself. As I say, he did seem to be getting over it. I didn't know him that well, though. It might be entirely possible. He was devoted to Mrs. Dillon. Maybe he could have taken his own life. I don't know.
Well, it leaves a big question to answer, doesn't it?
What's that?
Why do you need the $2,400 to do it?
1:25 p.m. We continued interviewing the bank manager, Mr. Harrison, but he was unable to come up with any further leads. Before we left the bank, he gave us a complete list of all of Chester Dillon's references. We gave him our card, and he told us he would pass along immediately any information he might get on the whereabouts of Mr. Dillon. 1:45, we went back to the office where we got a call from Lucille Banner. She gave us Dillon's last known address, and we drove out to check it. It was an apartment court in the Pico Crenshaw area. We talked to the manager, and she told us that Dillon had moved out 3 months before, on November 22nd. He told her that he was moving in with a close friend of his, and he gave her his forwarding address. It turned out to be a single-story frame cottage located in one of the older residential districts of the city. The name on the mailbox read Raymond L. Schaefer. We rang the bell, and a man who identified himself as Raymond Schaefer ushered us into a small living room. He told us that he was from the same town in the East that the Dillons came from, and that he was a longtime friend of theirs.
No, I haven't seen Chester for months. Last November, I think it was. That was the last time I saw him.
You say at that time Dillon was living in the apartment down in the Crenshaw area, Mr. Schaefer.
Yeah, that's right.
You mean he never came here to live with you?
No, it's just like I told you before. He talked about moving in here with me, but he never did. I haven't any idea where he is.
Well, he gave your name here as a forwarding address, Schaefer. Have you been getting his mail?
Yeah, matter of fact, I have. He told me he was going to do that. Never came to pick it up, though. Seemed funny to me.
You're still getting his mail here, is that right?
Yeah, it's still coming. Not much of it. Maybe a letter a week. Mostly bills and advertising.
Mm-hmm. This list of names you've given us, sir, these are all the people in the East Mr. Dillon was acquainted with, people he might contact on his trip back there, is that right?
That's all of them. As far as I know, he hadn't been back there yet, though.
How do you know that?
I got a letter from my sister Gert a couple of days ago. If Chester was in town, Gert would have known about it. He'd have been sure to stop by and see her. I wish I could help you. Tell you the truth, I'm getting a little worried about him myself.
Well, just have one more question, Mr. Schaefer. Do you know if Mr. Dillon was in the habit of carrying large sums of money around with him?
No, I don't think so. Chester was pretty cautious that way. He wasn't too free with a dollar, you know.
Would you happen to know if he had a large sum of money with him the last time you saw him?
No, if he did have, he didn't mention it.
I see.
You can't think of anything else that might give us a lead on Mr. Dillon's whereabouts, anything at all?
I think I've told you everything. I wish it was something I could tell you that it helped. I sure hope nothing's happened to him.
Yes, sir. Now, would you mind showing us that mail you're holding for Dillon, please?
Oh, sure, sir. Right over here. In the desk. There you are. That's all of it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Anything, Joe?
No, not much. Bills, circulars. Here's one with a New York postmark. Elmira, probably from his sister. Another one, only 3 days old, from the Union Department Store. A couple more earlier dates on it. That's about it.
And I'll copy down the return addresses on
fine. Okay.
Mr. Schaefer.
Yeah?
This suitcase by the desk here, initials on it. CLD.
Yeah?
CLD, is that your bag, Schaefer?
Oh, no, I forgot to tell you. Chester left that here one day.
Hmm? How was that?
Well, that was one day just before he was going to leave on his vacation. He brought over here and said he'd like to leave it with me. Forgot to mention it to you.
Mm-hmm. You bring anything else with him?
Yeah, he brought another suitcase with him, just like this one. I got it in the other room. He said he wanted to leave him here while he was on his vacation. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention it.
Well, maybe you forgot something else, Schaefer.
What?
Most people take their suitcases on a trip, don't they? 2:30 p.m. We continued questioning Raymond Schaefer. We opened the two suitcases labeled with the initials of Chester Dillon and found an assortment of personal items which Schaefer told us belonged to Dillon and his late wife. Small pictures, cigarette boxes, books, similar articles, which apparently would not be taken on a vacation trip. None of them were of any great value. After we left Schaefer's home, we checked him through R&I and found he had no criminal record. We checked further with friends and acquaintances of both men and found nothing to indicate that Schaefer was in any way involved in the disappearance of Chester Dillon. 3:30 p.m. We called the office and found that there'd been no answer so far to the broadcast and missing persons bulletins that we'd gotten out on Dillon. We started checking the references given us by the bank. First was the Union Department Store. It was located on Main Street in the south end of town. We checked with the credit department to see what information we could get from them.
Yes, here's the file on the Dillons right here. Chester L. and Sarah J. on Ralston Avenue.
Yes, ma'am, that's the one.
What information would you like, sir?
Well, we're trying to locate Mr. Dillon, ma'am. Have you had any recent change of address on that account?
No, we haven't. If they moved, you know.
Well, we believe so. We don't know his present address, though.
Mm. Now, we do have an outstanding bill of theirs, I noticed. Sent them several form letters. We've been trying to contact them ourselves.
Have there been any recent charges on that account, you know?
Let's see. Nothing too recent, no. Last charge was made on December 5th. Yes, Thursday, December 5th.
Hmm. That's a couple of weeks after he disappeared, Joe.
Yeah, that's right. What was that charge for, ma'am? What did Mr. Dillon buy?
Oh, Mr. Dillon didn't buy anything.
Beg your pardon?
The slip was signed by Mrs. Dillon.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
p.m., Thursday, February 7th. As soon as the clerk in the credit department at the Union Department Store showed us the sales slip with the late Mrs. Sarah Dillon's signature on it, we had the date on the sales slip double-checked immediately. The date as shown on the slip was correct beyond any doubt, December 5th. That was a little more than 2.5 months after Sarah Dillon had died. Who the person was who forged her signature or why they'd forged it, we had no idea. The amount of the charged purchase, as shown on the sales slip, was for $418, all of it for women's clothing. We attempted to check with the sales girl who handled the purchase, Alora Van Kirk, but we were told it was her day off. We called her home. They told us that she was gone for the day and couldn't be located. They said she'd be at work the following morning. 4:40 p.m., Ben and I took the sales slip with the forged signature on it and drove back to the office. We went directly to forgery detail, briefed them on our findings, and gave them the sales slip. Then we drove back to the home of the Dillon's friend, Raymond Schaefer, and checked through the two suitcases there. We came up with a small photo of Mrs. Dillon along with exemplars of her handwriting, as well as her husband's, which we found in an autograph album in one of the suitcases. The handwriting samples were checked against the signature on the sales slip, but neither of them matched. The work of compiling a list of all known female forgery suspects was begun immediately. The following morning, Ben and I went back to the Union Department Store, where we interviewed the sales girl, Laura Van Kirk, who'd handled the purchase.
Yes, I remember making the sale, officer. I'm not too sure about the woman who bought the things, though. I mean, what she looked like.
Well, could you try to describe her voice, Miss Van Kirk, just as well as you can remember?
She had light brown hair, I'm pretty sure of that. Not too old. Maybe in her late 30s, early 40s. She was a plain-looking woman, 5'5" or 5'6", thin as I remember. She wore glasses. I remember that, too.
Well, let's see. You got that picture of Miss Dillon there, Ben?
Yeah, here you are. Would you take a look at this picture, miss?
Now, does that look like the woman you waited on?
No, that's not her. The woman I waited on was much younger. She had light brown hair, too, not gray.
Uh-huh.
Thin face, I think. And she wore glasses, I'm sure of that.
You remember if there was a man with her, Miss Van Kirk, or was she alone?
No, she was alone. Now that I remember, there was something very different about the glasses she wore. I don't know if that's important or not.
What about her glasses?
They were horn-rimmed, as I remember, very light color. And there was some metalwork along the top edge of the frame. Very smart-looking. Gold metal all along the top.
Light brown hair, slight build, thin face, late 30s or early 40s. Wore light horn-rimmed glasses and gold metal on the frame.
Yes, that's right.
Check me if I'm wrong, Joe. That description sound familiar?
Just what I was thinking.
Horn-rimmed glasses, metal work on them. The woman who came to see us at the office?
Yeah, you got it. Lucille Banner. Ben and I went back to the office and had Lucille Banner checked through R&I. She had no criminal record. Then we drove to the home on Ralston Avenue, which Chester Dillon had leased to Lucille Banner, and which she in turn had sublet. We obtained a copy of the lease, which the Banner woman had with the current tenants, and which bore her signature. We brought the copy of the lease downtown, gave it to Don Meyer in handwriting, and asked him to compare Lucille Banner's signature with the signature on the sales slip that we'd obtained from the Union Department Store. 15 minutes later, he called us at the office with the result.
Yeah, Don.
Mm-hmm.
So. You're right. Thanks a lot.
What did he get?
Says there's no question in his mind.
Yeah.
Both signatures match perfectly.
What the reason was behind Lucille Banner's forging the signature of Mrs. Dillon on the sales slip, we didn't know. Whether or not it had any connection with the disappearance of Chester Dillon, we didn't know. As soon as we got the handwriting report from Don Meyer, Ben and I left the office immediately and drove to the bungalow which the Banner woman was renting on Ralston Avenue. It was a block down the street from the Dillon house. Lucille Banner wasn't at home, but a neighborhood gardener trimming the lawn in front of her house told us that she was expected back shortly. The gardener, who identified himself only as Julio, volunteered that he also did gardening work for Miss Banner when she occupied the Dillon home. He'd also worked for the Dillons when they lived in the house. He told us he liked the Dillons quite a bit, but that he didn't have much use for Miss Banner. He seemed to be up on all the news in the neighborhood. He trimmed the hedges of the lawn with hand shears as we talked to him.
Can you tell us anything about Mr. Dillon and Miss Banner, Julio? How'd they seem to get along, you know?
They get along all right, I guess. When I worked at the big house down there for Miss Banner, that's before she moved, I would see Mr. Dillon there. He would be at the house maybe once, two times a week. Miss Banner would ask him to come over and cook dinner for him.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Banner likes him, I think. Mr. Dillon, I don't know about him. He wasn't feeling so good. Still thinking about his wife. Here, I finish up this clipping now. There, all done.
You mentioned you don't like Miss Banner very much, Julio. Why is that? She ever give you a reason not to like her?
She's a little crazy, I think. Funny woman. When I used to work at the big house for her in the garden, She would watch me all the time, follow me all around, tell me to do all kind of crazy jobs. She gave me good pay, though, so I do them.
How do you mean, Julia? What kind of crazy job?
The compost box for fertilizer, you know. She wanted me to build one for her in the backyard. That was down the street at the Dillon house.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy woman. She wanted me to build a compost box in the greenhouse. Have a special place, Mark. Who ever heard of that, to build a compost box inside a greenhouse? Crazy.
Well, did you build it for her?
Yes, but not inside the greenhouse. I built it outside, right next door to the greenhouse. When she come outside, she go crazy almost. Call me names. Crazy. She made me tear it up. Then she made me build it inside the greenhouse, right on the place she had marked for it.
Sounds queer, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. When did all this happen, Julio? Do you remember? When you built the compost box, I mean.
A couple of months ago about that. It was just after Mr. Dillon went away. I tried to tell Miss Banner, who ever heard of a compost box in a greenhouse? She wouldn't listen. She had to have it built in a certain place, right in the greenhouse, a little piece of ground in there. The box had to go right on top of it.
Mm-hmm. You figure she acted pretty strange about it, do you?
You think she had something there, a little piece of ground. You think she had something to hide.
1:15 p.m. Lucille Banner returned home, and Ben and I went inside the house with her, where we questioned her in the living room. Outside in the front yard, the gardener, Julio, continued working on the lawn. Lucille Banner was calm and composed. We questioned her about the forged signature on the sales slip. She would admit nothing.
The whole thing's too silly to even comment on. I don't know what you're talking about, Sergeant.
We think you do, Miss Banner. Our handwriting man's checked the two signatures, one on the sales slip and one on the lease. They both match. They were written by the same person. There's no doubt about it. And check thoroughly.
Now, what about it, Miss Banner? There's no way out of it. You ought to know that.
I'll deny it. That's all. I'll keep on denying it. I wasn't in that store, and I didn't forge any signatures. Why would I do a thing like that? What kind of a woman do you think I am?
Well, all we know are the facts, ma'am. Now, why don't you give us a straight story? It's going to save time and trouble for everybody concerned.
You've heard everything I've got to say. This thing's ridiculous. It's stupid. I'm not answering any more questions.
Come on and get your hat and coat, Miss Banner. Afraid you'll have to come downtown with us.
What good's that going to do? I'll just keep on denying it. You can't make me say I did a thing like that.
Can I get your coat, please?
It's right here. All right.
Yes, ma'am. Car's right out in front.
Hold it a minute, will you, Ben?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Julio?
Yes, sir.
See you a minute?
Sure. Hello, Miss Bonnie.
Julio?
Favor I'd like to ask you, Julio. You got a couple minutes to spare?
Yeah, you want something?
We want to take a look in the backyard of the house down the street. Mr. Dillon's house. Like to have you come along with us, Julio. Won't take very long.
Sure, okay. I'll come along.
Bring a shovel along, will you, Julio? I'd like to check something.
Yeah, okay. I bring one.
All right,
Miss Banner.
What's this about? What are you trying to do?
Something we want to check in the Dillon's backyard. It won't take long.
What would it have to do with me? I don't have anything to do with that house. I don't even live there anymore. You realize that, don't you?
Yes, ma'am. We realize it.
I'll call my lawyer. I'll call him as soon as I get to a phone.
Yes, ma'am. Julia?
Back this way, Sergeant. Through the gate.
What are you trying to do to me? You know I don't live here anymore. I don't even have anything to do with this place.
You did live here, ma'am. You lived here when Mr. Dillon disappeared, isn't that right?
What are you trying to say? You've got no business on this property. You've got no business here at all.
Yes, ma'am, we have.
What?
Did you kill Jester Dillon? Did you kill him? Miss Banner?
All right, Julio, the compost box in the greenhouse. Do you want to start digging?
In the compost box?
Yeah, okay.
He was an old man. So old he was sick.
Yeah?
He didn't want to live anymore. He didn't have any reason for living. Why shouldn't he give me the house? Why shouldn't I have his money? I was nice to him. I cooked for him. Wanted to take care of him. He just didn't want to live anymore, that's all.
All right, Julio, you can hold it up.
You want to tell us, ma'am?
He needed a woman. Anybody could tell that. He needed me. He got along fine, pestering me. I offered to marry him, and he wouldn't do it. What he could do was think about his wife. She was dead. He'd sit around and talk about her all the time.
You killed him. Is that what you're trying to say?
He wanted to marry Chester and take care of him. He wouldn't do it. He had an argument in the kitchen one night. I had a gun and I killed him. I killed him.
Is that where you buried him? In the greenhouse?
Yes, I buried him deep. The gun, too. He'll be all right. Poor Chester.
Yeah.
He was so old. He needed a woman. Anyone would tell you that. He needed me.
Well, I guess you made a mistake.
No, Sergeant, he did.
Yeah?
He didn't want me.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 2nd, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 86, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Lucille Marie Banner was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. She received the sentence as prescribed by law. She is now serving a life term in the state penitentiary for women, Tehachapi, California. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Stay tuned for Counter Spy next on NBC.
Welcome back. You know, missing person cases tend to be some of the more fascinating cases that Webb does. First of all, we've broken the string of a string of various crimes. They actually were on one case this whole time, a missing man. I like these cases because they can end so many different ways. We, of course, had one of the early episodes from 1949, a Christmas episode that was actually recorded in August, The Big Missing, where it turned out the girl, the missing girl, she just had like a temporary amnesia, and she was found that way. Then, of course, we have this one that ends because of foul play. There have actually been, as you go through Dragnet, some very interesting variations as to what could happen when someone is missing, as opposed to where we know what the crime is, or even if there is a crime. So this really, the missing person cases, I think, are probably the best that Webb does, because you never know when you turn on the radio or turn on the TV, you would never know what exactly is going to happen if there's a missing person, because there's so many variables, because you just don't know what happened. It's the ultimate mystery. All right, well, that's it for this week's episode. Join us next week for another episode of Dragnet. I encourage you, visit our show notes site, dragnetradio.blogspot.com. Also, if you got any comments, feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us. And once again, please cast your vote for us once every month at Podcast Alley, podcastalley.com. This is Adam Graham, signing off.